Welcome to the IP360 podcast, brought to you by IP Private Wealth. This podcast talks about wealth, health, and all the different ways we measure our success. It's a true 360-degree look at what wealth means to you. Today's episode is all about the entrepreneurship journey. For over 20 years, INEX Inc. has provided executor resources to funeral homes across the nation. Corinne Bryson is the founder and CEO of INEX, and she's joining us today on the IP360 podcast to talk about lessons learned as a veteran business owner and entrepreneur. Let's go to today's interview and hear firsthand advice from someone with decades of experience that we can all learn from, or even simply just relate to. I am here with Corinne Bryson, CEO and founder of INEX Inc. Corinne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the welcome. It's good to be here.
Corinne, why don't you tell us a bit about INEX Inc. and exactly what you do?
Chief cook and bottle washer. I lead a fantastic team. It's taken years to build the team, but I have an incredible team. I started the company back in 2000 when there was a death in our family. My mother-in-law's mother passed away. So my husband at the time, his grandmother passed away. And it was his mom that was named as the executor. She was grieving the loss of her mother. She had never been an executor before, but she felt up to the task. She was a very organized, professional woman, and so felt confident to take on the role. And I just watched as it was a lot of two steps forward, one step back, as she tried to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And there was a lot of frustration, a lot of emotion, a lot of anger. I figured there must be a kit, there must be a package. This was when all of the For Dummies books were coming out, like Microsoft Word for Dummies, Excel for Dummies. And I thought, okay, I'll go try and buy an estate settlement for dummies book. But it didn't exist, it wasn't available. So at the time, I had been working in the financial industry. I had my designations. I understood what estate planning was. I'd seen many estate structures. And I assumed, okay, estate settlement must be just closing down those estate planning structures that you put in place. So I felt up to the task to create an estate settlement package when I couldn't find one. And that's what I did. That's how our toolkits came to fruition, was out of a need for our family. I took it into the funeral industry, showed it to some local Ottawa funeral homes, and they said, yeah, if something like this existed, every one of our families experienced the same frustrations and loss and confusion, and it's not our area of expertise. We don't have the time to give them the attention and level of detail that the family requires. We don't want the liability of possibly giving them the wrong answers. So if there was a kit or if there was a resource that we could provide them that would allow them on their own to take the next steps, that would be great. So that's how I started, just one funeral home after another. And now we've grown 21 years later to providing these kits to funeral homes throughout Canada and the United States.
Wow, that's amazing. And I'm guessing that given the pandemic, there's probably been a new level of interest in the types of services and support that you have to offer, given that many people would not be nearing what would be the usual end of life, and their families left behind are probably scrambling to figure out what to do.
Excellent point about that. Yeah, you bring up a couple of interesting elements of that. Certainly with the pandemic, a lot more people are focused on preparation and preparedness. And so we have a kit we launched a good decade after our original kit, which was how to settle an estate. After we created that a kit, about a decade later, we created what we call in case of emergency. And it's a preparedness kit so that you have all of your documentation assembled in one place. In the event, yes, of a death, inevitably, there's going to be one of three emergencies that everybody's going to experience in their life, either a death, an incapacitation, or displacement from natural disaster or man-made disaster, a fire, a flood, an explosion in your neighborhood. But everybody will incur one of those three inevitabilities. So our kit helps you gather everything, put it in one place, and when you're caught off guard, but you need all those important documents, to facilitate further decisions. You'll be able to pick this up and grab it and go as you exit your home and have to rebuild your life. You'll have your core documents with you. So it, back to the pandemic. The pandemic certainly has turned a lot of people's mindset to preparation. My future is unknown, but I do know there's going to be uncertainty in the future. How do I best prepare for it? The pandemic has also impacted our business because the funeral homes and funeral professionals now have limited contact with the families they serve. They're shifting far more online. The funeral industry has been somewhat slow to adapt technology, but the pandemic has kind of forced them, forced technology on them. So the digital version of our product has suddenly become very, very popular, a renewed interest in it, whereas the emphasis used to be on the hard copy, the tangible kit that we have, but now a lot of funeral homes are embracing our digital version because our digital version also allows them many digital communication points with their families. And that's what they want, to be able to extend that relationship with their family past, beyond just providing the funeral service, but maintain contact with the family. And so our digital version allows them to do that systematically, seamlessly, with structure. And that's become very, very popular.
That's so cool. You know, one of the parts of your story that I'm really fascinated with is sort of this from the ground up. You had an idea, you had a crisis in your own family, you saw an opportunity there. And you ran with it, and here we are 21 years later. And so often when we hear success stories, it seems to be what we hear, how it started and then the end result. Can you tell us a little bit about what the first couple of years were like?
Oh yeah, the journeys, the hiccups, the fear factor, all of that, running by the seat of your pants. I think I was probably a very typical entrepreneur. I didn't know what I didn't know. I had to surround myself with good people. Sometimes I surrounded myself with not good people, and those were costly decisions. But I soon wised up and realized that, put your team together, get a good team of good people, hire slow, fire fast. That's a great adage. One commonality I've learned amongst all business owners is how challenging HR is, getting good people on your team. Also finding good stakeholders. And but once you find those good people, meaning a good accountant, a good investment advisor, a good lawyer, a good marketing team, good IT people, there are some core stakeholders that you have to get in place for your business to succeed. When you can uncover those, and a lot of them is by referral. If you get one good stakeholder in your company, they'll refer you to others. Once you get that in place and you have your systems in place, and then you just work the systems and you grow your business. There's a lot of hard knocks, but I would say the most important thing is getting the right people, getting connected with the right people. And yeah, as a plug for Richard and his team and Kent and IP Wealth, I just value so much now when I have any sort of financial related question, or what do I do, or tax question, they're the first ones that I go to. They either answer it or they point me to where I need to go. So a lot of it I don't understand. It's above my head, but I've got trusted advisors that I know put the pieces in place where they need to be when they need to be there. And love that they're always available there for me, questions. And yeah.
That's amazing. And you've known Richard Kluska, our CEO at IP Private Wealth, for the entire journey?
Oh yeah, actually I worked with Richard before I started my company. So I had the good fortune of watching him as a mentor and as an entrepreneur himself. I say, you know, he gave me the best street smart lessons at what it takes to run a company. And we worked together for 5 years until I finally came to him and said, I think I'm going to go on my own and start my own company. And you know, I am so grateful that he supported me. I mean, we had a great working relationship, and I was a right hand to him, and yet to support your right hand to say, okay, if you think you can do it on your own, go ahead. And he did. And we now work together in a different capacity where he's my advisor. So yeah, it's worked out really well.
Amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about how, can you give me tips basically on how you learned to identify when you had the right or wrong people around the table?
Oh my goodness. The best barometer is probably your bank account. When suddenly there's more money going out and less value coming in, that's a pretty good indicator that you've got the wrong person in the wrong place. Your gut is another really good indicator. I'm still learning this, to trust your gut and follow your gut. And the sooner you listen to your gut, the better off you are. One piece of seasoned advice that someone gave me several years ago was that a wound from a scalpel heals quicker than 1,000 paper cuts. And that was so true. Just, you know, there are many times in a business owner's life where you have to make calculated but swift and decisive decisions that can be big decisions that you know are going to cause a big shift, a big change, a big pain, or a big hurdle. But when you can make those decisions, again, if you have a team in place, make sure that you consult your team. But when you know you've got something hard to do, the sooner you do it, the swifter and more concisely you do it, the faster you're going to heal, the sooner you're going to get back on track. They're hard things to have to do, but we all have to do them. It's just how quickly and effectively can you do that? Another interesting seasoned piece of advice I learned, and I'm sure others will have heard this analogy too, but it's something to the effect of, like, the space shuttle is off course 98% of the time. However, it still gets from A to B. It still lands at its destination. Or I think that even a flight, if you're flying from Ottawa to Vancouver, the vast majority of the time you're actually off course, and yet somehow you're going to leave Ottawa and you are going to land in Vancouver. And it's those 1,000,001 mid-course corrections that get you there. But you can't freak out when you're off course. You've got a sense when you're off course, and then you have to correct it. You will get there. So I'm also learning in working with Richard and the team there too, that it is just a matter of time. You get the plan in place, you get the vision, you get the right structure in place, you commit to the plan, making the deposits or doing the quarterly, semi-annual, annual reviews, things like that. You do what needs to be done and you work the plan and you'll reap the rewards. And I'm at a point in life now where I much prefer my money to work for me. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of long, hard years making the money. Now I want to preserve it and put it to work. And I'm really impressed with how well that's working out, and I'm in good hands.
Amazing. So we covered, like, you kind of had your early growth, and obviously you've taken that to, a great result. How did you know you were ready to really start to scale the business?
Well, the orders came in. That was the nice part. It's nice when you get to a position of maturity and reputation. And again, in order to achieve that, you have to deliver a quality product. You have to have a quality team. You have to have quality content. And then you start to attract more business. So build it firmly. I've never been afraid of spending. It takes money to make money. So, and you can't buy quality cheap. It's just not possible. So you have to have the faith. This might cost a lot, but if you make prudent decisions, and if you've run it by some advisors or other stakeholders, and you have kind of a collective agreement, you invest in that and the business will come. So how did I know when to scale? The business came to us. That's another thing. I'm grateful that I sell a product, not a service, because when I started the company, I looked at the e-myth, which Richard, I think, introduced me to the books on the e-myth, and building systems, being system dependent, not people dependent. And when you sell a service, you're limited by 24 hours in a day. You have constraints that when you sell a product, you don't have those constraints. So you can scale a product much easier. So I knew I could scale when the business came to me and we needed to scale. I also knew when to scale by listening to our clients and keeping in close touch with our clients and just asking another question. Again, I think it was Richard that coined this phrase in my mind was, what's your primary frustration? What's your primary frustration? And if you ask people that, it's amazing what they'll tell you. I mean, it could be something from something personal in their life to something just operationally and strategic, but what's your primary frustration? If you build that close relationship with your clients and have the confidentiality to be able to ask that, they'll tell you what they need. And that in our industry, that's how we ended up developing other product lines. We developed a comfort cub, which is a teddy bear that can hold keepsakes or a little bit of cremated remains. And that came from, just inquiring, what can we do for children? That was a pinch point, was there weren't anything to really help children grieve. So we came up with these teddy bears. Our line of processional fleet accessories. So when you see a funeral procession going down, it used to be you could tell it was a funeral procession because they had daytime running lights, but now everybody has daytime running lights. It used to be that you could tell it was a funeral procession because it had a hearse, but now with more and more cremations, they don't need to carry a casket. They don't need to have a hearse. So the lead car could be a Lincoln, which is indistinguishable from other people that drive Lincolns. So again, clients came to us and said, we need to identify our procession. What could you come up with that could help us navigate traffic, keep all of the cars together, give a less stressful, better experience to our families? And we listened to all the frustrations. Then we came up with the solution. So it's that's what's really allowed us to scale, is circling back to our clients and finding out what they need. It's a lot easier to create a solution to a need that exists than to create a product and try and generate the need.
Yes, for sure. And actually, that's really interesting because I don't know if you've noticed lately, but there's been a lot of, there's often a lot of people talking about this idea of, when people tell you you can't do something, don't listen to them. When people tell you to do it this way, but you want to do it this way, don't listen to them. And a lot of this concept of don't listen to them, and I know on a very generic, basic concept, what they're saying is don't let anyone stop you.
Yeah.
But I think one of my big questions to entrepreneurs is always, how did you know when to listen and when not to listen?
Mm-hmm.
And I think clients are a good one to listen to, right?
I would agree. Pick who you are going to listen to, because I'll say learning from other people's mistakes is very, very valuable. So there are a lot of times where I'm glad somebody said, well, you can do it that way, but if you do, you might want to prepare for this, that, or the other. I agree. Don't let somebody tell you you can't do it, but listen with caution to those that might be able to tell you a better way to do it. That's capitalize on them telling you a better way to do it. That's the trick.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about a time that you made a hard decision to step away from an opportunity?
A hard decision to step away from an opportunity. Actually, I would say I would probably be better off if I had said no more often than I've said yes. So I can't tell you, or nothing is coming to mind of when I made a decision to step away. I actually wish that I had said no more often, and said no more often, and then took all that money that I put towards trying to build something or create something or invest in a person to bring on as part of my team that wasn't the right person. Had I said no and just quietly taken the resources that then got allocated to that no that went anywhere and invested them or just sat on them, I would be miles ahead of where I am. So I think that would be another lesson that I would suggest is, you know what? Once you've got something good and it's working, stick to that, because when you start changing the sauce or trying different things, sometimes it can be easier. We get bored. We want more. As entrepreneurs, I think we aspire to more. We live on the adrenaline and the chaos and the creativity and everything that comes with that. It can be exhausting and it can be costly. Sometimes it's a lot easier to just enjoy the passivity of reap your harvest and then reap your harvest and invest it and allow it to grow in other quieter, easier ways.
Yeah, there's a lot of FOMO when you're an entrepreneur, especially if you're in a field that has trends rising and falling, right? And it can be very, very tempting to, my father always said, a dog that chases two rabbits goes hungry.
Yes, that's it. That's exactly it. Yeah, it eludes, they elude you both. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And I guess, like, of course, there's no magic way. No, there's no magic eight ball that that Kareem has that we can say, okay, what's the Kareem magic eight ball for which rabbit should I chase? But is there any sort of like guideline, rule of thumb that you use for yourself when you're trying to decide between two opportunities?
Huh. A lot of introspection and deep thought and reflecting on what have I learned in the past, and a lot of asking myself, why do I want this? Or why do I think this is a good decision? Why am I choosing this one over that one? Just double checking and always asking why. I think now that I've crested 50, and I think you learn, I've acquired a little bit of wisdom, and I've learned that I don't need to rush to make decisions on things, and that I can trust my gut, and that it is better to go slow and methodical and to understand what my intention is and why, and how credible is the information that I'm working with. And if I'm not comfortable with something, to stop and wait and fix it then, because again, it's a slippery slope. That I love the analogy of a windmill, and you know, at the core of the windmill, if you just change by a degree at the center of the windmill, way out on the tip, it makes this huge difference there. So yeah, you got to stay on top of the little things and make sure that they're taken care of, because they fester into something big pretty quick. And that's on the negative side. And yet on the positive side too, when you know you're going in the right direction, it just takes a little bit of momentum in the right direction and some patience and time and focused attention, and it can have huge positive impact.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit before when we were doing prep for this interview, and you mentioned that one of your sort of guiding rules in your mind that you keep in mind through business is protect what you have. Mm. Can you talk a little bit more about that concept? How does a business person protect what they have?
Protect what you have. You know, I think that is also emotionally, psychologically, protect what you have when you have your sanity, because there's most days you don't. Protect what you have, strive for that balance. And then also protect what you have in terms of your intellectual assets also. Stay on top of making sure that all of your IP is up to date and well protected. Like, there's so many intangible things that you have to protect as a business owner. Protect what you have, your people. Once you do get those right people as part of your team and those right stakeholders in place, value them like gold. Invest in those relationships. Make time to keep connected. Make time that sure that those individuals know how important that they are and how critical they are and how vested you are in them. And then also protect your dollars. I mean, it's not always easy to generate that revenue, and there's a high degree of risk. Once you've achieved that dollar, now protect it. And that's really where I so appreciate Richard and Kent and the team that's working there, and the tax information, the advice that I'm getting, and the comprehensive structure that I have in place. So I work hard to generate the dollars now. Then we harvest them and protect them, and put together that balanced portfolio. Again, not looking for anything that's going to knock it out of the park. That's my high risk business. But now take that money and put it into a much more structured, predictable, safe, balanced portfolio that you can sleep easy at night. And it's a lot easier, again, to manage a portfolio than it is to manage people. It's a lot easier to manage a portfolio than it is to manage an investment property that you know, has tenants and things like that. I used to like all that excitement. Now I'm quite content to just have my portfolio managed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really important, right? I mean, if you're a fan of The E-Myth, which is a great book for anyone listening mm-hmm. who hasn't read it yet, Richard had me give it to me my first week, but I knew him as well. And it just opened my eyes so much. So if you're a fan of the E-Myth and you're working with a wealth management firm like IP Private Wealth, then you know that the best way to financially to be a healthy business person is to not have everything tied up in the business, to have diversity so that you have a broader sort of base, like almost like a, you know, a tripod versus a one-legged podium for your financial safety, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. And on that concept, what are what are some of the other ways that you would protect yourself? Because you were talking about like financially, but there's other aspects to being an entrepreneur as well.
I wish I had had better protection way back at the beginning, before my divorce. I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to protect themselves, especially when you look nowadays at the divorce rate and what COVID has done and the number of people that are separating and entrepreneurs in there. I wish that I had understood the need to protect myself when I was creating my business. That was a big price that I paid, not having that piece of the puzzle in place. And so how to protect yourself? Again, just knowing that you're worth it. It's okay to be selfish on that issue. Let's get good advisors in place and let's take a look at your situation and what do you need for that best protection? Because the old adage, you can't give from an empty cup. Mm-hmm. Being an entrepreneur, it's a challenge. It's a daily challenge and you can't pour from an empty cup. So you got to make sure that the cup is filled, that the cup is protected. Otherwise, you're of no value to your employees, to the clients that you have. You have to be protected. I'm grateful that recently I just updated my will and power of attorney, just went through a legal name change, have gone through a marital status change and all that. So getting all of that corner estate structure updated and in place again, protecting in terms of critical illness and disability insurance, if that's the right solution, but getting the insurance pieces of the puzzle. I used to, again, had a disdain for insurance in the past because I said I would self-insure. I was creating my wealth. I'm building my nest egg. I would rather play the odds and not be insured. So for a long time, that was my structure. But now again, cresting 50, having achieved some of my financial goals, now I turn to looking to how do I protect this? And insurance has become a big part of that. And I look at that as a valuable investment also.
Right. And you touched on something there briefly around being a little bit selfish is not bad, or taking care of yourself is not bad. I would assume that given the nature of your business, helping people through some of the worst times in their life, that must be at times draining, rewarding, but also challenging on an emotional level, plus all of the already difficult and energy draining aspects of owning a business. It must sort of compound. And so like one of the first thoughts that comes to my mind when you said that was the importance of feeling like you have permission to take care of yourself. And just a woman business person to woman business person, I can say that there's also often like an extra pressure that, you know, you're already taking care of a business. So when you do have downtime, you should be taking care of somebody else in your life, but how important it is to take care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. We're pulled in a lot of different directions. Yeah. As female entrepreneurs, because you're right, we're caregivers. We can be in the middle of a sandwich generation, which is my situation. Plus you're taking care of employees and you're taking care of, we're a blended family now. So I play a role there also. So finding time, carving out time to take care of yourself is challenging. Another lesson that Richard taught me, and I'm proud that I've applied this lesson, but it's okay to reward yourself with, I'm going to say, toys or things that bring you joy and that you enjoy, whether that's a cottage or a boat or recreational RVs or what have you, what brings you joy. But the thing that I learned from watching Richard too, is you can only enjoy them one at a time. And so you can spread yourself thin having too many toys. There's only 24 hours in a day. You can't get to all of these things. So what is it really that brings you joy? Find that and enjoy that, but you don't need everything that brings you joy all at once. You don't have enough to enjoy it all at once. So yeah, being very mindful and intentional in how you're going to take care of yourself, because sometimes we can even spread that too thin or take on too much trying to take care of ourselves. And then we realize how tied we are to all these things that wasn't the intention in the first place.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I feel like as often A-type personalities running businesses, we're so used to working off a task list that even your downtime, you're like, okay, I'm going to start here. Then I'm going to go here.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
you talked about your team, and we just kind of touched on the fact that your business touches on like a really difficult life experience for a lot of your clients. So how do you help your team take care of themselves?
That's a great question. How I help our team take care of themselves. Well, again, I feel like this is an infomercial for Richard and his team, but again, they are the ones that have taught me this and I have followed what they recommended. We have a health and wellness plan in place. Again, we're very small. I'm a small company. We're a very small, tight team, under 5 employees. So we are small and tight. Years ago, again, I think it was back in 2008 or so, Richard helped me get set up this health and wellness plan. So we have a very generous plan for our employees. It's very flexible. They don't need a doctor's note in order to cover massage or this, that, or the other. So I really encourage our employees to take advantage of that. We also have a budget for education. If they want to take online courses or live courses or even buy books, like anything, if they enjoy reading, if they enjoy reading, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't necessarily have to be a scholastic or a book directly related to our industry. If that's going to bring them some downtime and enjoyment at the end of their day to go to bed and read a book or read a series, that's fine. It qualifies for that kind of coverage. So I think it's very important to invest back into your people to make it easy for them to get what they need. If they want to go for a massage, go for a massage. You don't have to bring me a doctor's note. Just do what is going to help you keep your cup full. Before COVID, we used to do monthly group events and we did lots of fun, like great things together. With COVID, that certainly changed the dynamic. But again, investing in that, we always make sure our fridge is stocked full of whatever anybody likes to drink or chocolate and things around the office. Just, you know, that I want people to come to work and enjoy being at work and feel like it's an extension of their home and that they have the flexibility. Richard also helped us put in place in our employee handbook. Richard helped align me with a great HR person, which is another key stakeholder in the business, and then putting in flex hours for employees or flex time that they can take as personal time. Again, you don't need a doctor's note to take it. If you need to do something because you've got to get it done, you've got to get it out of your mind, go and do that, get that taken care of so that then you can come back and focus 110% on what you're doing and be passionate about the company, about the clients that we serve, and about the role that you play in that.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. I wish more bosses were like that. That's really excellent. I think that's amazing to lead by example for with your company and be able to talk. You can see when you talk to business CEOs that they're hoping that things are kind of okay on that side of things. But when they talk about how to take care of their employees, their eyes kind of shift off yours. But as we're talking, you're so passionate and so you can really tell that you've really thought carefully about how you're taking care of your team. And that's so important in any business, but especially when you're working with one that where people must come in every day with a full cup of compassion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I kind of want to wrap up with a general question. It might be too broad, but you tell me. And that is, if you were to talk to a young business person starting out in their first year or two of getting a business off the ground right now, based on what you've learned, what are a few key things that you'd want to say to them?
I love that. Okay, so some from 50,000 foot view. Again, I think that's another Richard phrase, from 50,000 feet. What would I say to somebody starting out now? I would probably say, don't let the fear stop you. Meaning, if you have a good idea, I've spoken to many people that say, I have this really great idea, but I don't want to talk to anybody about it because I don't want my idea stolen. You know, I don't want anybody else to do my idea. So they limit themselves in moving forward because of that fear. You know, if you don't talk to people, you're not gonna bring that idea to fruition. You need to, and you need to have the faith that, you know what, you're the one with the passion behind that idea. If somebody else tries to knock you off, which I've experienced that. I've had that happen to me a couple of times. They can do their best to duplicate what you're doing. They can never duplicate your passion, your conviction, your commitment, because it's your idea. So they might try and follow you. They might trip you up. They might bother you, annoy you. They might take some business away from you. But if you stay true to your core, your passion, your conviction, they'll never be able to duplicate that. You'll still come ahead. So I would say, don't let the fear of what if stop you. Number two, always set the bar high as a barrier to entry. I knew that my company and my product could easily be duplicated. So I invested a lot in terms of the quality of the packaging. So if you're going to knock me off, you're going to have a hard time to come in at the same price point and charge less and provide equally as good quality packaging or better. So I set the bar high. I invested a lot in the technology. Again, you might think on the surface that it would be pretty easy to duplicate my company, but when you start looking about, oh my gosh, then we have to create this website and we have to invent these tools and we have to get this and we have to get that, you start adding up all the dollars to that. Hopefully that dissuades you by saying, ugh, you know what? And we have to compete with somebody that's already established in the marketplace. Now, let's not go there. So yeah, back to that. Don't let the fear stop you. If the fire is in your belly and you know it's a good idea and you've surrounded yourself with some good advisors that you've talked to them and bounced the ideas off on them, don't let the fear stop you. Set the bar high, because if you're the first one out the gate, you got to run fast, you got to run hard, and keep that bar high as a barrier to entry. And then, you know what, part of it is also just believing that the universe is going to bring it to you. It'll be what it'll be. And if you stumble and fall, those are the times when you learn something from it. Could be painful, could be expensive. You're going to learn something from it. You take those lessons and you move on. But really, life is good. Life is benevolent. If you've got that core fire in your belly, it's meant to be yours, and that success is meant to be yours and then meant to be shared. Have that gratitude and that sense of generosity in terms of sharing it with your people, with your stakeholders, with the clients that you serve. You give back. And if you can repeat that process, you'll have a lot of fun. It'll be a challenge, but you'll have a lot of fun.
Fantastic advice. Corinne, if people want to learn more about iNex, where can they go?
You can visit our website, inexinc.com, inexinc.com, and connect with us online.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, this has been Corinne Bryson, CEO and founder of iNex Inc., a really amazing company. And if you aren't prepared with an emergency kit, I think everyone should go out and do that immediately, especially I think we've all been reminded of how quick things can change this past 16 months. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jordan. I wish you all the best too.
I hope to have you on again. Let's have another chat and talk about actually what goes into preparing for worst case scenario.
Oh, that would be a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the IP360 podcast, brought to you by IP Private Wealth. Thanks to Corinne Bryson of iNex Inc. for joining us again. If you'd like to learn more about Corinne's business and the executive resources they offer, head to inexinc.com, spelt inexinc.com. For information about the show, you can reach out at comms, C-O-M-M-S, at ipprivatewealth.com. or head to ipprivatewealth.com for more information about the IP360 philosophy to wealth management. See you next time. And now for the fine print. The opinions and statements expressed by our team and guests are effective as of the date of this broadcast and may be subject to change.